Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, what impact do general elections actually have on the property market? It may not be what you'd expect. In this episode, we're going into new Winkworth research on what happens to house prices and market activity in the run-up to a general election and in the aftermath. Should this year's general election make you stop and think before you go house hunting? The data goes back to 1997, when Tony Blair won the first of his three victories for Labour. Along the way, we take in the 2010 David Cameron general election win, which ushered in the coalition government, and Boris Johnson's 2019 win, which was followed by the Boris bounce in house prices. In the build-up to an election, there are huge amounts of discussion about the impact of the main party's economic and tax policies on voters. But do these policies have any bearing on people's decision to buy a house, causing them to rush through a deal or to delay the process? Or is the availability of finance more important than who's going to be moving into number 10 Downing Street or the house next door, which is the home of the Chancellor? These will be questions that matter to you if you're thinking of buying or selling in this general election year. To answer them, I'm joined by Dominic Agace, Chief Executive of Winkworth, and by Aaron Strutt from Trinity Financial, the mortgage brokers. Great that you can both join us. Right, first over to you, Dominic. The Winkworth research on general elections and house prices makes some interesting and surprising reading. For example, prices rose by almost the same amount in advance of Blair's win in 1997 and before Boris's victory in 2019. What's your take on that?
So I think the interesting thing about the research is it identifies that perhaps election effect is more transactional than prices. And it's pretty evenly balanced before and after effect in terms of price movements. You know, one therefore has to look at kind of what else is going on beyond the election, and in particular, I suppose, the individual circumstances around that. So when you look at the one you raised, it is really interesting, and you kind of wonder why was there such excitement pre the Boris election, when actually, if you think back to it, it was pretty confusing times, parliamentary times. But I think it makes more sense when you understand that it's taken off land registry. So it's from completed sales. And really, what you're seeing is perhaps there was a pretty binary choice at that point between a sort of fairly hard left agenda and Boris's agenda. And I think, therefore, it was not unexpected that you saw some higher value properties sell prior to the election, perhaps of those that were a bit worried, because it actually at the time was a much closer run thing. It turned out not to be, but people perceived it to be a much closer run thing than it turned out to be. And so perhaps that is evidence of those with higher value properties looking to sell in advance of perhaps the potential mansion taxes and the like that were being discussed at the time. And when you look back at that compared to Tony Blair's, again, you have to look at the broader context and where was that in the sort of last 50 years of the property market. And coming up to that, you know, you were looking at the sort of late 90s recovery from early 90s recession, and actually the property prices were moving in the right direction. So there was broader momentum in the market. So kind of there are individual situations that need to be looked at and an understanding that transactions and who's selling, whether it's houses or flats or larger houses or small houses, also has an impact on the numbers.
Going on from that, is it your sense that activity tends to slow as an election draws near and then speed up afterwards, or is that oversimplifying conditions?
No, I think the broad trend is that, you know, before within the 3 months before everyone sort of starts to watch the election unfold and the sort of politics, it's hard not to get distracted by from doing your day-to-day life to watch the electioneering that goes on. And often the policies that are sort of being stated in the media might be more extreme than those that come to pass. So undoubtedly, in the 3 months before, there is a sort of transactionally, it slows and it generally recovers that momentum, as the property market often does, recovers any lulls after that. Interesting, though, if you go a bit further before it, obviously you've got governments trying to win the vote. So, you know, the 12 months before can often be more transactions going on as you're looking at people pushing policies that will please the electorate to hopefully get them to retain power.
Going back to the research, it shows that in the period before the 2019 election, there was a 21% price rise in prime central London. But afterwards, what happens? Prices drop by 9.4% amidst what we thought was a bounce. Would you be able to shed some light on the forces behind those results and whether we could see a replay this time around?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think we will. You know, I think it's very different. 2019, it's always hard to remember back, but 2019 were fairly extreme times. And as I sort of said, there was a binary choice between Boris Johnson and Corbyn at the time. So it's understandable that those in central London, there was a perception that, you know, there was an agenda to pursue to tax more heavily those wealthier ones that own houses in London. And, you know, property has always been quite an easy thing to tax because, you know, you can't hide it. It's right there and people can go and collect the money they want from the house. So yeah, I think it's understandable that you're seeing more houses in central London at the more expensive level sell. And so when you look at land registry records, you see this sort of price bump beforehand and afterwards, obviously, you know, the election has passed and sort of more moderate policies have prevailed. And so you see that sort of come off.
And this time around, do you sense that in prime central London there is some nervousness about the possibility of a Labour government?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty narrow this election. I mean, in some ways it's the least sort of exciting election that we've had for many elections, isn't it? I mean, there's from a property point of view, they're fairly well aligned, both governments, and I don't think there are dramatic shocks. And I think Sir Keir Starmer's been very keen to promote himself as sort of establishment in that regard, and you know, not to pursue wealth or wealth generation, to be a sort of new Labour version of a Labour government rather than his sort of predecessor's version. So it doesn't feel that there's a wide gap that might cause the reactions that perhaps a potential Corbyn government caused going into 2019.
So the mood is generally calmer. Now, once upon a time, we tended to see the Tories as the party of home ownership. And we also thought, whether this was right or not, that property prices did very well under a Tory government. What does your research tell us about that?
So it says it's much closer than perhaps that perception says. I mean, I think it's sort of two out of the seven elections, I think it's a sort of one positive post-election for the Tories and sort of one negative might be for Labour. I'll just check. But it's basically pretty close. So I think there are other things at play, timings in the economy, and different various cycles in our global cycles have a bigger impact. I mean, you know, the biggest growths have been in the last 50 years have been under Tony Blair as the Labour leader. I think it was 211% over 10 years, which was £48 a day you made on your average property price. So it was Labour government that's led the way. Second was perhaps the sort of more Maggie's era where people sort of felt the prices were going up the most. And obviously there were a lot more policies related to housing in Margaret Thatcher's era. You know, Right to Buy came in, Buy to Let was launched. There was the sort of free market liberalisation of the property market. But actually there was higher growth in Tony Blair's era, which perhaps matched a sort of global credit, increase in credit for everyone, so more mortgages available and the sort of noughties unfolding. So it doesn't necessarily have to be Labour or Conservative. I think there are some wider things to look at, and the timing of the wider economy will sort of define how property prices will unfold.
The availability of finance is key. It's not who's occupying number 10, it's whether you can get the kind of mortgage you want.
Yes. I think that's, I think in the property market, employment and finance are the two fundamental parts of it, and cost of that finance. So, yeah, as I said, in the noughties, you know, there was sort of every year transactions increased as mortgages got looser and perhaps obviously, well, they obviously went too far and that caused the problems of 2008, 2009. And we're in a much more constrained environment now because I think we learned from that. So you won't see the unfettered growth perhaps of that era. It's a more protected market, and hence the property market's fared far better in the last couple of years.
Now, are any of your clients mentioning the general election to you at the moment?
I think the perception is there's not a huge amount of it. It's not, as I say, as previous ones. And I think the perception is yes, it will have an impact. And everyone expects it to have an impact because traditionally, in the 3 months out to election, people sort of slightly sit on their hands in their various activities to wait to see what's being said and how that who will get in. But I think the general feeling, I mean, if you're a house builder there, you'd probably prefer a Labour government, which is probably the first time that's been said in the last 50 years. So we're not looking at two extreme options. We're looking at two pretty narrow options. So I don't feel it will have such a dramatic impact. A lot of that, as the research says, though, is sort of dependent on the time of year these elections come. So for the property market, everyone sells their house for the best value in when the daffodils are out in spring. And so it's important that that market isn't affected by other news flow. And that will sort of affect the whole year. Whereas if it's cooled in the sort of latter months, winter months, then people are less focused on, it's less important for the property market.
Because in fact, that is the most telling piece of data from your research, that whoever is in power, sell in May.
Yes, I think that's the message we take out of it is, you know, actually, when you look at the last seven elections, four out of the seven price growth was slightly higher beforehand than it was in the 3 months afterwards. And, you know, that shows that there's not a reason to hold off. And perhaps it's because less people are coming to the market. There's more, your property stands out more. And it also perhaps shows that it's more important generally to pick the right time of year to sell your property than it is to wait for an election to pass and come the other side, because you might find prices are better beforehand.
This spring, is it turning out to be a bumper?
I think, yeah, I mean, I had someone say to me that spring was early, which was end of January, which was very, very, very optimistic. So, this year started briskly, which is good, and it started better than expected. I think we've had a bit of a sort of surge, wasn't there, when everyone thought that everything was going to, interest rates going to drop dramatic quickly. And a bit of that's abating now as people have taken more sort of reasoned view to perhaps the Bank of England's messaging about when interest rates will come down and cost of finance gone up a bit. But it's still, you know, I think everyone's seeing perhaps that the peak pain's passed and that the sort of there is, we're on the trajectory where things are going to be cheaper and activity will improve and obviously the sort of cost of living crisis is passing. So I think it's fairly optimistic at the moment.
So, right. Dominic thinks it's all quite optimistic at the moment, but Aaron, what's your view on interest rates? The Bank of England may now not cut rates until the summer. Is that going to be bad for the mortgage market?
Well, thankfully, mortgage rates have already come down since the particularly bad period of the mini budget. So a lot of the meetings we've been to and the economists we've spoken to suggested that there will be three base rate reductions this year. It seems more likely there's possibly going to be one or two, but thankfully fixed rate mortgages have already got cheaper, even though the Bank of England base rate hasn't come down.
I thought that we'd been hearing in the last week or two that lenders were actually raising the cost of some of their fixed rate deals.
So yeah, there's no doubt about it. Fixed rates have gone up over the last couple of weeks. On one day last week, 10 lenders increased their rates, only Halifax reduced them. So there has been some pretty dramatic changes. Even so, fixed rates are still pretty cheap compared to where they were again during the mini budget, where they increased significantly. So 2-year fixes around about 4.4% and 5-year fixes around about 4.25%. So they're still affordable compared to where they had been at 5, 6, 7%.
Now, if any Property Exchange podcast fans are wondering whether they should start picking out a deal now or wait a month or two, what would be your advice?
If you're in a position to take a mortgage, it definitely makes sense to secure the rate while you can. We've had quite a few people that have held off taking a new rate, and in that time, lenders have increased their rates. So what we've actually seen is people have come to us or looking for a mortgage, they've decided that rates were too high, expected that the Bank of England base rate would come down, and decided that they would wait a few months. In that time, mortgage rates have actually gone up. So they could have actually secured a rate and protected themselves for some of the increases.
Right. So the advice is not to delay, not to wait around. Let's put ourselves now in the position of the hundreds of thousands of people who this year are coming off a very cheap deal, one of those sub 2% deals that were around. They're now remortgaging. Are they able to afford the higher repayments they're facing, or are some going to have to make some very tough decisions?
Yeah, I mean, in our office, we've been speaking to a lot of clients who've been coming off of the super cheap rates, and there's been some extremely difficult conversations. People are taking the kids out of private school, worrying about how they're going to pay the bills, selling properties. The payments are just unaffordable for lots of people. I think it has improved recently. So some people aren't suffering as much as they were, maybe if you were remortgaging 6, 7, 8 months ago. So it is slightly better, but people are still feeling the pinch.
But lenders are still happy to lend to these people despite their rather straitened financial circumstances.
The lenders are really keen to issue mortgages. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we deal with business development managers from most of the banks, and there have been a lot trying to come in to see us over the last 3, 4, 5 months. So they definitely are keen for business, and they're easing their criteria at the minute as well. So offering more generous mortgages, more generous income multiples, and they're trying harder.
So lenders want business. There's no longer a mortgage price war, but the lenders definitely want to lend.
Well, there is still a price war. It's just that the prices are slightly more expensive than they were. So they were sub 4% 5-year fixes, and now they are slightly more expensive. So there is a price war. It's just not as cheap as we've seen it previously.
Now, your advice to clients at the moment, is it to fix or to go on to a variable rate and maybe fixed deals get cheaper down the road?
It just depends on your financial situation. If you the cheapest rates are 5-year fixes. If you want the cheapest rate and the lowest monthly repayments, then you can take a 5-year fix, although lots of our clients have been taking 2-year deals because they think the rates will be cheaper in the future or in the near future. But there aren't any guarantees, as we've seen previously, with rates hitting 6, 7, 8%.
You say lenders are very, very keen to lend at the moment, but have they any property preferences? Are they less keen on flats, for example?
I don't think they don't mind whether they lend to houses or flats. Lots of the first-time buyers we deal with are getting on the property ladder and buying flats. Some of the older borrowers, people with more of a deposit, are buying houses. So I don't think they're particularly fussed at the moment. Some of the private banks would probably prefer that people buy houses in nicer areas, although Santander has just lowered the amount of deposit that borrowers need to get on the property ladder when they buy a new build flat. So they're keen on houses or flats. I think, to be honest, they just want to issue more mortgages.
So actually, conditions are not too bad for first-time buyers wanting finance?
No. First-time buyers are struggling to get the mortgages they need. I mean, a fair few of them have been relying on the bank of mum and dad, so they do have the deposit. The difficulty is mortgage affordability, which the lenders have clamped down on. So it is difficult for borrowers to get enough money or a sufficiently large mortgage to get the property they want. There are schemes out there. For example, Nationwide offers up to 5.5 times salary for first-time buyers, which is more generous than lots of the other lenders. So there are schemes out there.
Now, against that background, there's a lot of talk about 99% mortgages for first-time buyers in the budget or in the manifesto. Theoretically, are lenders going to be happy to make this finance available to first-time buyers? And could the scheme actually work?
So some of the lenders we've been speaking to have been discussing this with the government. So it would appear that it could work. It could help a lot of first-time buyers get onto the property ladder. So it will provide more hope to a lot of first-time buyers. We've seen lenders like Skipton Building Society issue their track record mortgage, where you don't need to put a deposit down. You just need to prove that you've been paying your rent on time for between a year or 18 months. That mortgage, the track record mortgage, when Skipton launched it, got an incredible amount of publicity. It has been popular, but probably not as popular as Skipton would have thought. But it's good that an option's actually come back to the market.
So lenders are being flexible. They're happy to lend. Could all be very good news for the spring property market. But since we're talking politics, Dominic, I'm going to come back to you for one final question. Imagine you're Chancellor, living in that very nice 11 Downing Street address. What would you do for the housing market in the budget or put into a manifesto?
It's a long-term business, the property business, and so there are some solutions that need to be kind of long-term. And the one that stands out at the moment in anything is planning. So planning is a problem, and any government, you know, needs to focus on resolving that. I think people have lost faith probably in the actual makeup of the Tory party to be able to resolve the planning issue, despite some tougher words by Mr. Gove on kind of requirements to build on brownfield. I think the fact the dynamics of the property market of the Tory party kind of stopped that being ever coming into force. The other part, I think, is taxation, really. And property, because it's always been an easy target for raising money, I think stamp duty came in to fund the Crimean War temporarily. So since then, it's evolved a lot over many years, but it's never gone away and no tax ever gets reversed, but more taxes come. And it does have an impact. And I think, you know, it's much talked about, but stamp duty for many reasons is a big problem. I mean, it's for starting point, there's sort of the raising of stamp duty for first time buyers to 425/300. That runs out next year. You know, that should stay in place, you know, so that the first time buyers have an easier job of getting on the property ladder. The general stamp duty is deeply unfair on the different regions where different properties cost you different prices. And so you're paying far more tax to get a two-bed flat or a three-bed house in Southeast than you might be in other areas. So that seems to be punitive on younger families, whereas it's not punitive in younger families. So that the geographic distribution is poor. And really affects the efficiency of the housing market, which is the efficiency of the economy, isn't it? Being able to choose where you want to live and take that step. So stamp duty, which is much talked about, but I think it just has to, and I, you know, one sadly doesn't see it being reversed because taxes don't get reversed really in the property market. But that would be one that I would definitely focus on.
Right. We've just heard Dominic Agace's pitch to be Chancellor of the Exchequer. And on that, I'm going to thank you both very much, Dominic and Aaron. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your insights and your advice. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast. If you want to know more, let me say again, then be sure to subscribe.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.